Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has only two matters on its oral submission docket. They are DeWitt County Electric Cooperative versus Daniel S. and Suzanne Parks from DeWitt County, and El Paso Natural Gas versus Minco Oil and Gas and others from Hemphill County. In each of these arguments, we've allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. A petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. You may purchase a tape of these arguments from our clerk if you desire to do so. We'll take a brief recess in between the presentation of the arguments. Justice Gonzalez was called out of town and will take no part in the deliberation or decision in these cases. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in DeWitt versus Parks.
May it please the court, Ms. Elizabeth Florence will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner is reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Elizabeth Florence, and my school and I represent DeWitt County Electric Cooperative in this case. This is a contract construction case that the respondents have disguised and masqueraded as a deceptive trade practices case. Now, I say this because the threshold issue in this case is how this easement contract is to be construed. They have admitted in the trial court that if the co-op had the right under the contract to cut down the three trees that they cut down, then they have no claim. So therefore, the threshold issue is what does this contract mean? I provided each of you with a copy of the easement as well as a document that extracts the language from the easement giving the co-op the right to cut down the trees.
Is this the kind of contract into which a good faith obligation might be reasonably implied?
No, Your Honor, it's not. This is not a case where any kind of relationship like that would apply. And they have cited no, they contend that, but they've cited the courts to no cases involving electric co-ops that do hold that.
Okay, Ms. Florence, and you're saying, it seemed to me that it was unclear in the record whether one of these trees may or may not have been inside the easement, but you're saying that everybody concedes that if this contract permitted the right to cut down all three trees, then all three trees were subject to being cut down.
That's correct. And what it is, two trees, there's no question, were inside the easement. The other one, the base, is halfway in, halfway out, but the branches and the leaves were in the easement. And they have conceded, and when they were asked specifically that question by the trial judge, were the trees in the easement? Yes, they were. So it's our contention that yes, they were all in the easement. But under our construction of the easement, the co-op has the blanket right to cut down trees within the easement. The easement has three separate distinct clauses, each of which conveys a specific right to the co-op. The first one gives them the clear right to clear the right-of-way of all obstructions. The second one gives them the right to cut and trim trees within the right-of-way or chemically use herbicides on shrubbery or trees. And the third gives them the right to cut down from time to time all dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous trees that are tall enough to strike the wires from falling. Our construction of this case, and what's unusual about this case, is neither side contends that this is an ambiguous contract. Both sides say that it is unambiguous. It's just the construction difference. Now, the first clause, which is three clauses that are connected with a comma and the word and. The first clause is limited to the right-of-way. The second clause is limited to the right-of-way. The third clause is not limited to the right-of-way. So the first clause gives the co-op the right, the clear right within the right-of-way to clear the easement of all obstructions. Now, obstruction is not defined within the easement, but the court gives words for plain, ordinary meaning and can look to a dictionary to determine what obstruction means. Now, the Merriam-Webster dictionary defines obstruction as something that blocks or impedes passage, action, or operation. Now, a tree generally can block or impede passage, action, or operation. And in an electrical context, it could also impede or obstruct the passage of electricity. There's evidence of that in the record, although it's our contention you don't even need to look at the record because everything, is, this contract is unambiguous. Everybody agrees to that.
It could, but does it have to be able to remove it?
I'm sorry, it could what?
Obstruct the passage of electricity.
Correct.
But it does could it have to before you can remove it?
That's correct. Under
it
our
does.
Construction, it always could be an obstruction. And under the easement, if it's in the right-of-way, we can remove it.
My question to you is, does it have to be obstructing the passage of electricity for you to cut it, for you to remove it?
No, it does not.
Why
the
not?
Purpose of an easement...
It's not an obstruction if it's not.
Well, the purpose of it may not be an obstruction for the electrical context, and there's nothing in this contract that shows that they meant the electrical meaning. They just say obstructions generally. Now, one of the purposes of an easement is to allow the utility company to go in the easement with their trucks and take care of, maintain the wires, make sure the wires are okay, check the poles, change out the wires, put up the wires, put up the poles, and they can't do that if their trucks can't pass through the easement. So
is there evidence that that was the case with these trees?
There is no evidence of that. But under the easement, it doesn't matter as long as it's an obstruction because it's not... There's no indication within the contract that it was intended to be the electrical context as far as obstruction goes. In fact, earlier in the contract, it talks about buildings and other obstructions. So it's not just a tree that could be an obstruction. It could be
a building. Is there any evidence in the record as to whether or not the trees that were in the right-of-way were obstructions, or is that a fact issue?
Yes, there is. There was testimony that the trees were burning because they were touching the wires.
Is that controverted? Was that a fact issue?
It was controverted. It was a fact issue.
Okay, but it's not a fact issue that they were in the right of way.
Right. That is not a fact issue at all.
Is it possible that even though this contract is unambiguous, that the parties would have a different understanding of the conduct of the parties under the contract? As an example, in this case, one of the arguments that's being put forth is we have this property, we've got some trees on it, we want electricity brought to the property. The electric company says, here, give us this. I understand you've got to have access. You understand you've got to have access. I understand my trees can't be knocking down your wires. You understand the trees can't be knocking down the wires. But I had clearly no understanding that you use easements as a way to get free firewood.
Well,
so, I mean... Is there a problem under this where the co-op says once we get access to easements, then we get all this firewood that has absolutely nothing to do with access to or safety or anything else, and so it is really a failure of the minds to meet over what we intend to do with the language in this contract?
Well, first of all, it's disputed that the co-op went in to get free firewood.
Well, I understand it's disputed, but my point is, what's the significance of that, where we have the object of a contract to be one thing, but the understanding of the parties of how they'll apply the contract coming from totally different directions?
Right. Well, under the easement, in the right-of-way, an obstruction, it doesn't say it has to be obstructing any, something specifically. It just has to be an obstruction within the easement for them to be able to remove it. And then they can cut and trim or use herbicides on any tree or any shrubbery. It's not limited to an obstruction. It's not limited to something being dead, weed, leaning, or dangerous. And a herbicide, although that's not an issue in this case, it does show that they had the right to go in there and kill a tree. And if you use herbicides, you're going to kill a tree.
Do you contend that cut and cut down are identical?
We contend that cut down is a subset of cut. If you harmonize the entire contract, and they cut and trim, if you said that cut was the same thing as trim, obviously that would be redundant and you would be rendering a word meaningless. And so in that context, they are very similar. We don't contend that they're different, but they're just this one's a subset of the other.
So you have the utility has less options with a dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous tree.
That's correct. Those are trees.
And,
that are outside of the right-of-way, because that clause is not limited to the right-of-way like the first two clauses are. And if you think about it, a tree doesn't decide it's going to grow within 30 feet of an easement. And there could be a tree 1 inch outside the easement. It could be dead, it could be weak, leaning, and dangerous, and tall enough to take out the wires from falling. Now, obviously, it would not be the intent of the co-op to let such a tree just stay there. And knowing that in the next storm or the next storm, the tree might blow over and take out the wires. And when it does, hundreds of people could be without electricity, which is one of their purposes, is to provide electricity to their customers. It could also put a live wire down on the ground. It could injure somebody. It could start a fire. And so I think it's clear from the intent of the contract that that would not be what they intended. They intended to have the right to go in an area where they normally wouldn't have a right to go in order to take out a tree that could pose a danger.
Would you address their DTPA argument?
Sure. We contend, first of all, that they don't have any DTPA claims. They've even conceded in the trial court that if our interpretation of this easement is as we say it is, that the co-op had the right to do what they did, then they don't have any claims. So that's the first reason they don't have a DTPA claim. The second reason is they're not consumers under the easement contract. They are consumers for the purchase of electricity, but they are not consumers when it comes to entering this contract.
But the contract was entered into because they sought to purchase electricity.
Correct.
The contract was somewhat ancillary to what they were consumers of.
I see your point, but I think an example that might clear up my position is if a person went to a car body shop to have their car repaired, they would be a consumer if the car was not repaired properly. However, if while they were at the car repair shop, the car repairman threw a wrench and hit the person on the head and they had a bodily injury claim, they're not a consumer under that claim. But they're not a consumer under this case. This is a breach of contract case.
Let's go back to your first point, though, about the DTPA. You make it seem as though because they have this contract, none of the representations that were made could be a viable DTPA claim?
Well, the main misrepresentation that they're claiming was made is that there was this policy.
Right.
And under this policy, the co-op had the right, or they claimed they had the right to go in and strip the land, and they did. Well, there's controverting testimony in the record that shows that they didn't just go and strip the right-of-way of everybody.
Okay, but is it a fact, or is it at least a disputed fact, that the co-op had this policy?
It's disputed. What the co-op thought they
so
had...
So it would be a fact issue then?
Right.
And it's at least a fact issue that the policy was not disclosed.
Correct.
And a failure to disclose a policy, why could that not rise to the level of a DTPA violation?
Well, it's the co-op's position that they, first of all, that this policy, all it is a construction of what the easement says. It's the co-op's position that they had the right to go in and clear a right-of-way. And that's what they did here. They went in and took out three trees. They didn't completely clear the right-of-way, but they took out three trees.
Why would you have, if you view the first clause, the right to clear all obstructions, to apply to anything that could be an obstruction, why would you need the second phrase to cut and trim trees within the right-of-way? Because they would always be obstructions,
well,
so you'd always have the right to do anything with them you'd want to.
Well, trimming is different from removing.
But cutting a tree is exactly the same thing as clearing the right-of-way of an obstruction, which you claim is a tree.
If you do hold that cut is cutting down, you're probably right. But if you hold, as they've contended, that cut is with an electric saw, say, and that trim is with hand clippers, then they're different. And so it's not necessarily redundant and doesn't render it meaningless.
So you'd say if you retain only the right to clear the right-of-way of all obstructions, the clear the right-of-way would be exclusive of trimming back things to clear the right-of-way.
Well, it's just different. Removing and trimming are different things.
Okay.
So, I mean, you could trim back a tree.
Which would be clearing the right-of-way of
obstructions. It'd be clearing the right-of-way where the wire is. But it's not clearing the right. It may not be clearing the right-of-way that's on the ground, because it goes from the ground.
But if you need to do that, you still have the provision that says we can clear the right-of-way.
Exactly. That's my point.
So as to the first two trees, you're relying on the first clause.
We're relying on the first two clauses for all three trees. The first clause or the second clause, however you want to read
no,
it.
I know, but the third tree is the one that may or may not be in the right-of-way, so it gets subject to a little bit different consideration.
Right, but I don't think that's a fact issue because they've conceded it in the record that it was in the right-of-way when asked that specific question. So, and the easement...
So your position then is if they've conceded it... third tree that it was in the right of way, then we don't have to worry about the third clause. We could look to one of the first two clauses.
Correct.
As a matter of law to decide with respect to that tree.
Correct.
Now, as to the first two trees, though, you said that it was that whether or not those trees were obstructions, were it was a fact, was the subject of controverting evidence at trial.
It was.
How can the directed verdict have been proper, even if we agree with your interpretation? If there is a question about whether or not these two trees that were in the right-of-way were an obstruction or not,
mm-hmm.
Why would the jury get to decide whether they really had the right to clear those trees?
Well, obstruction is one of those terms that, as when you look at the clear and plain meaning, it clearly impedes the passage.
Well, I understand, but if there's a question, I understand. If we agree with your interpretation that, as a matter of law, this is what the and you and the cooperative goes to trial and puts on evidence that these leaves were burning on the trees and that they really were obstructing, the obstruction in the right-of-way, and the plaintiff comes in and puts on testimony that says, no, the leaves were not burning, and they really weren't doing anything to obstruct in the right-of-way. In fact, you cut them down because you wanted them for firewood. Why isn't then there a question for the jury to decide as to whether or not you could remove those trees?
Right.
Factually, not, I mean, assuming your interpretation.
Well, first of all, obstruction, the definition, because it's in the dictionary, could be decided as a matter of law. Secondly,
well, I understand that the definition can be decided as a matter of law. And we say this is what it means.
Well, secondly, the easement is not just where the wires are. The easement is 30 feet on either side, and it goes from under the ground to a certain footage above the ground. And so the obstruction doesn't necessarily have to be in the wires. It could be on the ground if it prevented them from doing what it is they need.
But as I understand the DeWitt's argument in this case, they say these trees were not obstructing anything. So therefore, even if your meaning is the correct one under the law, you didn't have any right to take them down. They were minding their own business sitting there. They may have been located in the right-of-way, but they weren't doing anything.
Well, it's our position that anything in the right-of-way is an obstruction.
Just as a matter of law, if it's in the right-of-way, it can go.
Exactly.
The fact that it's in the right-of-way makes it an obstruction.
No, the fact that it's an obstruction and in the right-of-way.
Well, but that's my question. As I understand it, they say that even if we agree with your obstruction, your definition of obstruction, mm-hmm. that these trees were not obstructions. They may have been in the right-of-way, but they weren't obstructing anything.
But the easement is not, I mean, what I'm saying is the easement is not just up in the air with the wires. The easement's on the ground. And if it is in the middle, even, or where the wires are, because the easement goes 15 feet on either side of the wires, if the tree is anywhere in there, it could prevent the trucks from going in and doing the other job that they do, repairing wires, putting up wires, maintaining wires. And so, therefore, it's our position that anything in the easement is an obstruction or a potential obstruction.
Well, but it doesn't read potential obstruction. It says read clear the right-of-way of all obstructions.
Right. And
so wouldn't you factually have to prove that something was, in fact, an obstruction to support your right to remove it?
I don't think so. It's the co-op's position that anything in the right-of-way is an obstruction.
As a matter of law. If it's in the right-of-way, as a matter of law, it's an obstruction, so you can take it out. Okay,
yeah.
I see.
I see my time is up.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Mac Miller will present arguments for the respondent.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Mac Miller. The parks are over here. This case has a variety of features to it, one of which is I will endeavor to keep my presentation short and hopefully be less than the full time allotted. Also, as the court is aware, we are also up here on our own petition for review. So we're asking for affirmative relief here as opposed to just protecting what happened below. Also, we think that as a summary of what we've asked the court to do, you can find that on our brief in response to the co-op's brief on page XI, page Roman numeral 11, we've listed what we think are rulings this court can do as a matter of law on the evidence in this case. Some are pure law, some involve undisputed facts. Also, yes, sir.
In this clause that's in the agreement, it says a cooperative shall have the right to cut trees within the right-of-way.
Yes, sir.
I assume cut means something different than simply trim. Why, it seems to me, why aren't the parks simply saying, well, I know that was our agreement, but I believed them when they said they weren't going to do that? I mean,
well,
isn't that what's going on here? And so I know that's what I said they should do, but
yes, sir. If
we didn't think
that
they were going to do that.
That clause is in the same sentence with the immediate following clause, not even separated by a comma, that says, but you can only cut them down when they meet certain criteria. Same sentence, no comma. So clearly, cut meant something different than cut down. Now, we're not here today on a breach of contract argument, which did the co-op go broader than reasonably necessary. That's another clause that's in this easement that's at issue. Certainly, if there was no language about cutting the trees down, but limited them, if the only issue was could they cut them down based on a cut language, as you're focusing on, we would say that if they went no broader than necessary to do the electrical work that was at issue, then perhaps they could cut the trees down. But this has limiting language that says, but you can't do that. They were represented and agreed.
The limiting language, they can't do that.
They could, if there was no language here restricting when they could cut a tree down, if that third clause was not there, then if the question was, could they, under the cut and trim language, cut a tree down or clear an obstruction, it would be a fact-driven issue. And it would be factually driven and connected to the prior language that says, the co-op says it will go no broader than reasonably necessary to provide electrical service. So in a given case, if that were the issue, which is not what we have, that would be a fact-driven question that would have to be a jury decision.
So you're arguing this clause does not permit them to cut down a tree within the easement unless it's an obstruction.
Precisely. No, the third clause, or the first clause that says clear an obstruction, we're saying...
You agree a tree could be an obstruction.
A tree can be an obstruction. But we're saying that unless factually it was an obstruction, they can't use the clear language. So we're saying since these trees were
right,
not an obstruction, that's not an issue.
Make sure I understand. In the second phrase, to cut and trim, you're saying cut means something different than cut down because cut down is referred to later in that clause.
Yes, sir.
Well, my question to you is then, does cut mean the same thing as trim?
It can, except that to us, you know, again, we heard 2 weeks of testimony from a whole variety of folks, and basically the trim seemed to be something smaller than cut. You got to go and cut off big branches or something, but we could not, there was not, as far as I'm aware, a specific industry definition as to how far you go, and it quits being a trim and it now goes into a cut.
Now, under your construction of the easement, if it has to be an obstruction before they can cut or trim, is that your position?
That's correct.
So we've always got a fact question on when they go out and even trim the trees as to whether it's an obstruction.
If they're going to try to use obstruction as an excuse for what they did,
well,
yes.
Under your theory, they can't even trim the trees until there's an obstruction. Is that correct?
No. You can cut a trim a tree. We had industry testimony.
But
that
even
trimming
if it's
the
not
six,
an obstruction.
Yeah. 6 feet is sort of the normal, a lot of people do about 6 feet. They're trying to get the branches
so
away from the
your
line.
Whole argument centers around what the word cut means, whether it's just the equivalent of trimming or whether it means cut down.
No, cut down, yes. We're saying they cut down these trees, it's not disputed, there's no issue
but
with
it. If we decide that cut means cut down, you agree that it doesn't have to be an obstruction to cut down.
Yes.
So it centers around basically what does the word cut mean.
You can cut and trim a tree without it being an obstruction, or you can cut down a tree without it being an obstruction, provided it's dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous. So there are three different categories of focal points here.
But you think all are governed by the provision of the easement that says that the co-op won't do any more than necessary?
Yes, sir.
All three clauses or something?
Yes, sir.
So if you cut back on a tree 7 foot instead of 6 foot, 8 foot instead of 4 foot, you'd have a jury issue?
In theory, yes. It would be, again, what is the industry standard? And presumably a lawyer talking with an expert, as we did, would not mount an action based on 7 foot versus 6 or something like that, because the 6 feet is not cast in holy writ. That's sort of a rule of thumb, but there's nothing.
But if it were 9 foot, that'd be 50% more. Isn't that fine?
Potentially. Could be.
Well, let's make sure we understand, too, about where these trees were. Do you now concede that all three trees at least had their trunks in the easement?
No. The trunks of two were inside the easement. The third one was outside. In our statement of facts, I believe we give the record reference. I forgot it was a foot or two outside, but branches did grow into the easement, and what the co-op did is they cut it off approximately at the dotted line at the extremity of the right-of-way. So they just, anything that was inside that 30-foot swath, they whacked off.
So they didn't cut the tree down totally, the third tree?
In the pictures, it's got in the photographs, it's got a foot or two sticking above the ground outside the easement. You know, it grew couple of feet up, then it bent into, they cut it off, leaving the stub outside the...
But they did, the only thing they cut was what was physically in the...
Yes. Now, one minor thing we need to make sure here that, to clear up what counsel was saying, is herbicides is not an issue before this court. It is not part of this contract in dispute. As we pointed out, the cooperative before the parks came into the office and signed this, which we learned during discovery, had investigated, done a study, concluded they would never use herbicides. They made a policy board decision, and when Mr. Parks came in, he specifically inquired about herbicides and was advised that that was not going to ever be used. And this is not disputed in the record. We pointed that out at the Court of Appeals below. We pointed it out in our statement of facts here. It has never been disputed, and it isn't disputed. So herbicides, even though written in the form in 1985, subsequent to that and before the parks signed this document, and when they signed it, it was decided it was not a part of the contract. So we don't think that the herbicide language has anything to do with how this ought to be interpreted. Now, we think that the context and the special relationship of this is important. We have a cooperative which is presumably owned by its consumer members. The assets, the trucks, the wagons, everything is owned by its own membership. To become and get electricity, you got to sign up and become a consumer. You sign documents that says you're a consumer. We had a formal admission by the cooperative saying that for all purposes of this case, the parks were consumers.
Let me ask you on this issue. Ms. Lawrence says that if we adopt the utility company's construction of the easement, you don't have a DTPA claim. Do you agree with that?
No. Wait a minute. What we said below and admitted was to the trial judge, we said, had there been an express declaration in this easement that said we can cut out any tree, every branch within the right-of-way, or if we can clear and remove all trees and branches within the right-of-way, if it had been clear that said that, then yes, we would not have a DTP action. And that's basically what our complaint is here, is they've got a document and a representation that says we're concerned about landowners' trees. We don't cut them down unless they're dead, weak, or leaning. We send somebody out to your property to meet with you, to take your needs into concern. We eyeball the place before we do the work. All of this is a representation that says landowner counts, his land counts, whatever his concerns are count. Jim Springs, the manager, admitted. So did Sylvester
Butler. I'm just trying to understand that. Why is it you say that, assuming that we say that the easement is unambiguous and it allows you to cut any tree that's in the right-of-way, whether it's an obstruction or not, you can clear the right-of-way. You say you would not have a DTPA claim?
If this court concludes that this easement says they can do what they want in the right-of-way, then I will admit we would not have a DTP action.
Why not?
Because then the easement would clearly say they can do what they want.
So your DTPA claim is basically based on the ambiguities and the unclearness of the easement agreement?
No. Ours is based on the fact that they've got an undisclosed policy, which the Court of Appeals found, that says we can do whatever we want in the right-of-way. Contrast that with several things. One is the written easement that says we only cut trees down if they're dead, weak, or leaning. That's not a we own everything in the right-of-way representation. We also have nobody at the front office telling us they claim the right to strip everything in the right-of-way if they want to. We have Butler, the engineering coordinator, meeting them on their property. He admits, I didn't tell them that we claim the right that we can do whatever we want in the right-of-way.
So it's a failure to disclose.
Failure to disclose, which we indicate in the context of a special relationship, this fiduciary relationship, there is a mandatory obligation to disclose material facts, which the failure to which is deception.
What's okay, the basis for the fiduciary relationship?
Pardon?
What is the factual basis for your claim of fiduciary relationship here?
The fiduciary relationship is this is not an arm's length transaction. This isn't a third party pipeline company coming onto your land saying, hey, pretty please, can I put a pipe across it? This is your co-op, your membership, your representation. They own your assets. The trucks, everything, are owned by the landowners.
So if you own stock in the pipeline company, they couldn't do it?
They don't come in that capacity, Your Honor.
Well, I know, but if you own stock in Exxon, then they've got a fiduciary duty to you?
No, sir. There's a different base of ownership in the stock. The stock company is nationwide. You're talking about a focal on one landowner. Here you've got a co-op that is geographically regulated to a certain area. Everybody in that area can only get the electricity if they become a member of that co-op. They sign up papers that says you're a consumer. They've admitted there's a special relationship. They run the assets for the benefit of their landowner member consumers. It's a much more close relationship than something like owning stock in Exxon.
If they had not obtained electricity from this co-op, where would they have obtained it from?
They could have, in theory, used solar. They looked at the trial testimony. They had looked at solar. They had looked at getting a diesel.
But there's no other provider?
Not a third-party provider, no, sir. You can't get it from the city that I know of.
So they wanted electricity from a provider. Either they had to get it from the co-op or they couldn't get it.
Correct.
Mr. Miller, if we read the contract the way you say the contract ought to be read, then what difference does it make that they had some sort of policy that they would use this contract to clear-cut you? If we read the contract the way you say it ought to be read, then they breached the contract by cutting down the trees, correct?
Your Honor, we would say it goes beyond that. Is if they've got a contract, as we've indicated, the deceptive trade practice is an assertion, can include an assertion of a legal right that they don't have. Someone says, I have the right to clear-cut. And if that's a claim that is not supported in the document, the Supreme Court has held, and Delaney and others, has said, you can't do that. You cannot claim a right that doesn't exist in the contract. If you claim a right that isn't there, that's deceptive as a matter of law. That's what we're asserting here. They've got the strip the right-of-way policy that nobody knew about until after it was too late to take protective action. Had it been disclosed up front, the parks and the PUC tariff have options. They can move the poles, they can put higher poles, they can put sidearms on the things to push wires against trees, they can relocate the poles. Granted, at the park's expense, you know, the additional expense above what they would normally pay, but you got to have disclosure to do that. We didn't get disclosure. It's the failure to disclose that is a key deceptive act.
They would not have executed this agreement but for their, let's see, being misled into believing that there was not a clear-cut policy on the easement.
Correct. they got an easement document which says we only touch trees under certain
conditions. So it really doesn't matter what this agreement says. Their argument really is that we don't care what the agreement says. We would not have signed this agreement but for the fact that they failed to disclose to us what their policy was about clear-cutting easements, and based on their duty to disclose, because they'd already disclosed to us that they don't do that, we then were misled into executing this. So this is really
that's true to a point, if I'm understanding you correctly, is if they have a document that limits their legal rights and they don't disclose a conflicting policy, in other words, they basically, we don't do anything that's in the document, we do what we want, that in and of itself is a failure to disclose, that's deceptive. Second, if they then claim a legal right under a contract that isn't in there, if they claim, if the contract clearly says we can't do this, and they nevertheless say, yes, we can, that is a claimed right under an unambiguous contract that isn't in there. That's a second cause of action under the deceptive trade practice.
Did I understand you say that there's also a policy that landowners can try to save trees by paying additional?
Yes. We had Jim Springs, the manager, testified, and I think that's in one of our briefs, that he said, of course we try to have a meeting of the minds before we take out trees. That's normal. We had Sylvester Butler, the engineering coordinator, admitted we normally talk with landowners about trees.
No, I'm saying that when you're giving the easement, that you can have it in a different place or
yes,
if you will bear the cost.
Yes. There was evidence, and I have one or two in my brief. In one case, they moved the lines 187 feet to get them away from some pine trees that are fast growing. They had burning in the branches. We included, I think, photographs showing where the line went through that burned them brown. There was admitted burning, obviously involving trees, but there they moved them instead of cutting them down. Ours got cut down. There was testimony that they could have put, the co-op has 60-foot poles. They were pulling all the old poles out anyhow, all except, I think they left one in place. Take it back. They were going to remove all. They left one or two in place. They removed two or three others. They could have put in 60-foot poles, which would have given them 20-foot more clearance. Granted, you'd have had to run a longer line or do something to, you know, to increase it. But the PUC tariff says, and we quote that, and that's part of why we say it ought to be part of the contract. The PUC tariff says that the co-op shall modify and move its facilities if the landowner pays for it. The parks didn't know they had a problem. Nobody told them. They could have done that. All right, on the, we said repeatedly, this is not just a breach of contract case. If the issue were, like I think you said, Your Honor, if they should have gone 8 feet instead of 6 or 9 feet instead of 6, that might or might not be a breach of contract case. That's a, did they do something that is allowed in the language and they went broader than reasonably necessary? That would be a breach of contract case. Hopefully I've shown we're not focusing on that, although that was part of the trial below.
Well, you say breach of contract. An easement's more than a contract, isn't it? Isn't it an interest in real property?
Yes. Yes.
And the utility company owns the dominant estate.
They're the holder of the easement. That's correct. Right, my time is out. If I have any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Seriously, with regard to the reasonably and necessary language, the respondents contend that that serves as a check for all rights granted in this easement. I remind the court that under the contract construction rule, specific clauses control general. And in this case, the granting of the right to cut down and trim trees is a very specific clause, so therefore it controls the reasonably and necessary. Also, if the court were to adopt their interpretation and use the reasonably necessary language to restrict the right that the co-op has, what would prevent a landowner from later coming on and saying, well, 30 feet is, which is also a specific provision in the easement, is more, broader than reasonably necessary. You only need 20 feet, or you only need 10 feet in order to conduct electric services. So you need to, I remind the court to keep all this in mind when construing the contract as far as the reasonably necessary language.
Ms. Florence, Mr. Miller made an issue of the fact that this co-op seems to have a tree-friendly policy that it announces to potential members when it talks about the easement. Then the next part of his argument is because they announced this a tree-friendly policy, they then have a duty to disclose the clear-cutting policy of their easements. How do you respond to that?
Well, the humanistic policy that he's talking about in the record is referred to close to home, close to the building, close to houses. And that's not what we have here. This was right off the road, off the main road onto the park's property. And so it's not the same thing. And
that's clear in the tree policy. Our tree-friendly policy only applies to trees next to homes.
They said in the record that we try when we're close to home to work with the landowner and figure out what we can do with the tree. And as far as this undisclosed policy, it's not undisclosed. It's what the easement says. It gives them the right, the unlimited right, to cut down trees within the right of way. And so there's no undisclosed policy. Had the park really studied the easement, they would have seen that. And I mean, they had the right to go in and cut down these trees. I also wanted to point out that when Mr. McNabb was up here addressing you all about, he talked about the dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous provision and constructive arch and falling provision. It says that also applies within the right-of-way. It does not. His interpretation ignores the comma that follows the word obstruction and the word and that comes after herbicides and before it can cut down. This shows that there are three clauses. The first one is that the co-op shall have the right to clear the right-of-way of all obstructions. Second one is to cut and trim trees within the right-of-way or chemically treat trees or shrubbery with herbicides. And three, to cut down from time to time all dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous trees that are tall enough to strike the wires from falling. Now, as I've told you earlier, it's the co-op's position that the last clause, the third clause about dead, weak, leaning, or dangerous trees, because it doesn't have the right-of-way language in it specifically, the first two clauses do, it applies to trees that are outside the easement, and I gave you the example of the tree that was outside the easement and that was dangerous and could take out the wires from falling. His definition of trim that he said earlier, that trim was with hand clippers and cut was with an electric saw, that's not in the record anywhere. There's no testimony as to what trim means at all.
What evidence is there in the record that the only time that the co-op will make accommodations to wire around trees or other things is when it's close to a house?
There is testimony from, I believe it's Jim Spring, who worked for the co-op, who did discuss that.
Is there evidence to the contrary?
There, not that I recall. He also says that the tariff and the electric services agreement needs to be considered as part of the easement, but the Texas law says that if another document that's not referred to in a signed document is not specifically referred to, it cannot be part of that document. So I urge you not to consider the tariff and the electric services agreement as part of the easement. The easement is a document that stands alone.
But is not the easement subject to the tariff agreement?
It doesn't say this specifically in its terms, and so therefore, under Texas law, it's gone.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court will take a brief recess.
All right.